Yellowstone, established through an act signed by Ulysses S. Grant, was the nation's first national park, March 1st, 1872.
It's getting late, sir. I was wondering, are we through for the evening?
Well, we're through with work, Josh. But this part's fun.
Which part, sir?
The part where I get you to sit down and teach you a little something.
Ah, yeah. You're not tired, sir?
No.
Perhaps if you got into bed.
I'm a national park buff, Josh.
I'm sorry, sir?
I say I'm a national park buff. I'll bet you didn't know that about me.
Well, I didn't know that about you, sir, but I'm certainly not surprised.
Why is that?
You're quite a nerd, Mr. President.
Really?
Yes, sir.
I assume that was said with all due respect.
Yes, sir.
Is it nerd-like to know that Everglades National Park is the largest remaining subtropical wilderness in the continental United States and has extensive mangrove forests?
Just a little bit, yes.
There are 54 national parks in this country, Josh.
Please tell me you haven't been to all of them.
I have been to all of them. I should show you my slide collection.
Oh, would you?
Grand Canyon, Bryce Canyon, Badlands, Capitol Reef, Acadia, which is so often overlooked.
You should certainly feel free to keep talking, but I need to go home so that I can be back in my office in 4 hours.
Dry Tortugas?
See, the thing is, I can't leave until you give me permission.
Petrified Forest, North Cascades, Joshua Tree, Shenandoah National Park, right here in Virginia. We should organize a staff field trip to Shenandoah. I could even act as the guide. What do you think?
Good a place as any to dump your body.
What was that?
Did I say that out loud?
See? And I was going to let you go home.
But instead?
We're going to talk about Yosemite.
Pre-recorded live from Pennsylvania and Nebraska, U.S. of A. It's the Bob and Elvis Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Elvis Dingledean.
Technology is like living with the eyes of a shark. A shark's eyes have no life in them. And the way technology is advancing today, every day there's a new product. Every day the prices go up. And guess what?
What?
In 3 weeks' time, maybe 2 days, maybe a year, maybe a half a year, technology is going to be developed so strict and so refined that it will be able to kill your mother.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bob and Elvis Show.
Your computer is going to kill your mother.
Was that Gary Busey?
That was Gary Busey, yeah. That's because all the Charlie Sheen shit has absolutely reminded me of Gary Busey.
Yeah. Just batshit crazy.
Yeah, he's somewhere between Gary Busey and Hunter S. Thompson at this point. I mean, I don't know if you've seen interviews with the actual Hunter S. Thompson beyond, you know, the Johnny Depp portrayal on the movie. But when he's high as a kite on cocaine and he's talking and he's just rambling, that's exactly what Charlie Sheen's like. Yeah. And, I promised myself, I said, you know what we're going to do right out of the shoot is we're gonna chastise MSNBC and and everyone for talking about Charlie Sheen. And what am I doing?
Yeah, talking about Charlie Sheen.
That's right. But, they're spending a lot of time on that guy, huh?
Yeah, man loves him some snatch. Can't get enough of the vagina, that guy.
Winner.
Yeah.
All of his tweets start with winner.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
So, I mean, it's not really, I mean, I'm not complimenting the guy when I say he's like Hunter S. Thompson or Gary Busey. I mean, Busey's got severe brain damage. And Hunter S. Thompson was high as a kite on a variety of drugs.
Mm-hmm. All at the same time.
And Charlie Sheen thinks that, you know, we're going to believe that he's absolutely sober. You see him, he looked like death. I mean, he literally looked like he was, we got 1 foot in the grave. He's like approaching Crypt Keeper status.
He looked like death for a long time.
Well, they must put on like a latex, like a Rick Baker latex Charlie Sheen mask on him for on the show, because he doesn't look that awful on the show. But then when you see him off the show.
Yeah.
He just looks like,
Crypt Keeper.
Yeah, I mean,
he looks older than his dad.
I mean, you know, there's meth addicts who, you know, have it together physically more than Charlie Sheen.
Because his physical condition is starting to wear on the face jobs that he's had, so it's not evening out.
Now, like, wait, has he had face? I didn't know that. I can't.
Oh,
tell.
He has to look at that face. There's nothing natural about his jaw and his nose and his chin. He's had to have had some chiseling.
He's like our age, though. I mean, he's in his mid-40s.
He's a movie star. My God, that girl Hayden Panettiere from Heroes, that little blonde girl. She's had like 15 things done. She's like 12.
Oh, God.
It's body dysmorphia. It's nothing to do with how old you are, what you actually look like. It's what you think you have to look like.
Yeah.
When you're one of those douches.
Well, I thought there was some way you could tell. Like, you can kind of tell.
I'm positive he's had something done. His eyes, his nose. He just doesn't look natural. It doesn't look normal.
Well, he's probably had hair plugs. Like, I have hair plugs like that.
Oh, his dad, the only thing I can tell about his dad is he's got those big fake veneers, those big fake chompers.
Yeah, that's true.
But his dad's had like 18 heart attacks. So, I mean, he had a heart attack in the middle of fucking Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, Martin Sheen has had a pretty rough life as far as alcoholism goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Queen is...
Oh, President Bartlett, you're so wonderfully nerdy. I like to think that conversations like that between Josh and President Bartlett actually happened in this White House.
Yeah.
Like, President Obama is just ruminating on some fucking thing he knows that nobody else in the world knows.
Yeah, something about the Constitution, some rare bit of knowledge about the drafting of the Constitution at the, you know, the convention in Philadelphia, and he's got, you know, 20 different things he wants to talk about, and everyone's bored and wants to gouge
White House
eyeballs
nerds
out.
Are just wanting to shoot themselves, yeah.
Right. but yeah, that's that clip is appropriate for another reason, because you know, I'm on this national parks thing where they want to cut they actually did. The House Republicans, you know, cut $51 million out of national parks budget. We'll get to that in a bit. But most importantly is the fact that you're evidently going back and you're going to be paying your mortgage again.
Sort of. I don't know.
And it's
honestly don't know. I don't know what the legal status is. Like, I don't know. There's like 12 different programs, and I don't qualify for half of them. I keep getting, like, I get these letters that say, congratulations, here's your modification. And then the next day I'll get a letter that says, oh, fuck you, your modification got denied. What? And then I'll have to call the 800 number on the first one and get transferred to the 800 number for the second one so those two departments can fight it out. It's such a clusterfuck, you wouldn't believe it.
Well, so let's recap. Let's recap for people joining the show for the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
So you decided that your mortgage was too high, the Farm of Doom was too much of a disaster, you've got septic sludge regurgitating out of pipes and tubes all around the house. The
backyard the turning into a fucking swamp.
The swamp, and you've got the ceiling is collapsing because of the pipes that were laid in 1848. And
the sunroom of infinite horrors.
Yeah.
That will literally blister your skin in the summer, and you can see your breath in it in the winter.
So the place is completely underwater, literally and financially.
Yes.
And so you decide that rather than spend this money on a place that's underwater, you're going to take that money and invest it for your daughter. And so you stopped paying your mortgage like seven months ago. You were going
to 9 months ago now.
Nine months ago, and you were going to let it foreclose, and you guys were going to bug out. And go rent a place, possibly in a different state,
in Iowa, you know, in an actual town with people instead of this, you know, one horse shithole with insane people in it.
Right.
Had a plan, but then things accelerated.
Things
got quickly out of hand, and suddenly there was a trustee involved, and I hear about the pending auction of my Farm of Doom by reading about it in the paper. So I literally read about my pending ejection, the pending auction in the local paper. apparently, the law firm to whom the trustees, you know, to which has been trusted my land, forgot to send me the registered mail that says, oh, by the way, we're the trustees and we're selling your shit. They forgot to send me that. And instead, the Nebraska state law says that you've got to post it for 5 weeks in the paper, 5 weeks prior to the auction. So that happened. So then the plan B hadn't really been fleshed out yet. I didn't really want to get kicked out before Peanut is out of school. I sent a couple of well-timed faxes, did a little internet research, found out that typically with these big banks, if you shout bankruptcy, that gets a whole different level of involvement from your lender, where they have to deal with lawyers and it's a whole different thing. They don't want to do that. So here's a tip. Anybody facing this, if you're staring down the barrel of it and you want to hold them off, just send a fax to their to the collections people, to the proper department, saying you've got 48 hours to get back to me, or I'm filing bankruptcy. Within 48 hours of that fax, they sent me a deal modifying my loan. They've got something called an RMA, which is a mortgage modification thing. And they said, yeah, congratulations, you're approved. So that was the good news. The bad news is the new payment, the test payment, the test balloon, the three-month pilot program, that new payment is $500 more than my original payment that I couldn't
make. Oh, my God. That's insane.
That's awesome, isn't it?
So not only are you paying the mortgage again, but you're now actually paying a monthly payment that's $500 more than the payment that you hated before.
That I couldn't even manage before.
That you couldn't do before. You are a terrible businessman.
I am. I've negotiated my way all the way up to a $500 increase in my underwater mortgage.
That's awful.
That's fucking terrible.
Good job.
So they send me the paperwork, which was really a relief. I mean, I don't care if it was $5,000 a month, because basically what I was looking at was an auction, you know, and I had to get that stopped. So I really just had to do something, because I wasn't prepared to move Peanut into the fucking Fleabag motel down the road. So it stopped the audit. And the good news is, if I find something between now and April 1st somewhere, then I can just tell them to go fuck themselves again. So because of the law, they have to post that auction for 5 weeks in the paper. That gives me – so I've got until April 1st to make that first payment. Mm-hmm. If I didn't make that – so that's like a month, and then I've got an extra 5 weeks on top of that, because they have to post the auction for 5 weeks. So I've got at least – 9 weeks to do something. I've got it all calculated out. And then push comes to shove, I make that one April 1st payment. Then I've got another 9 weeks, because I don't have to make another payment for a month, and then they've got another 5 weeks to post. So I've got it all figured out. But Chase Manhattan can seriously go fuck itself. just for the circuitous nature, the ridiculous nature of the process. It couldn't just be somebody that you call and talk to, and they work it out. You know, they made me fax these papers and these forms, and I did, and then they said I didn't, but I did, and then I had to file them again, and then I get this thing by FedEx saying sorry. Just literally the day after I got the thing saying you were approved, I got another one saying you were declined, you were not approved. But then I had to go look up what the thing is that I was not approved, and that's something called HAMP, H-A-M-P, which is the government program, the Homeowners Affordable Mortgage Program. And in order to qualify for HAMP, your mortgage payment has to be more than 31 or 33% of your gross salary. And it's not. The Farm of Doom's not 30-whatever percent. So I didn't qualify for the suck-it-on-ice federal program.
Well, of course not, because technically – I mean, let's call a spade here. You're gaming the system. You're
totally with the system. I could have not paid all my other bills and paid my mortgage easily. I mean, I make a shit ton of money. I really do. I make, you know, comfortable six figures. But last year, I made a shit ton less than I typically do. Mm. And all these other bills are piling up. I got a crap load of debt just for stuff. And I got some medical bills and stuff. So, yeah, I could have chosen not to pay a bunch of other stuff and paid my mortgage. But I decided, no, I think I'll just not pay for the Farm of Doom, because I fucking hate the Farm of Doom. And I hate living in Nebraska, and I hate living in this town. Mm-hmm. So it was calculated, yeah, and I was gaming the system to some extent. I just didn't know it was going to catch up with me as quickly as it did and create this little mini crisis.
Right. So your finish line is the end of your daughter's school year.
Like,
so
May.
you're trying to play this game out until that point whereby you can actually move without taking her out of school.
Yes, basically.
Right. So
yeah.
So you're not.
It'd be sad. I mean, to me, it would be sad to leave this palatial. You know, this house has a reputation in town. People know about this house. It's that house. It's the house. It's you live in that house. it's a spread. It's a big place on a lot of land, and it would just be embarrassing and retarded and sad to move into like a one bedroom shithole in town. When I leave, I want to leave hard. Like I want to burn the place to the ground and leave with my ass hanging out the window, the bottle of champagne, and the great big middle finger to the whole place. And I never, ever, ever want to come back, mm-hmm. right? I don't want to move twice. I don't want to move from here to some shithole in town and then move to Iowa. I want to just get the fuck out once. So, yeah, I now if I could figure out a way to stretch it into the end of school and not have to pay a dime, that would be the best thing. Like if I could just keep calling somebody and bitching and crying and faking suicide and, you know, saying my mother died or something, you know, just really, you know, make them pay for it for a while. Mm-hmm. That would be perfect. But
well, keep it.
I got to pay about $9,000 out of the pocket. No, fuck that.
So are you going to do it? I mean, I get the sense you're ambivalent about whether or not you're going to be paying this much, much higher mortgage payment than what you had before.
Yeah, I'll probably pay the first one just to get over the – because that would – if I pay April, then that gets me into May, and then I know I've got 5 weeks built in. So that's the end of the school year. So then the only variable becomes, you know, actually finding a place in Iowa and packing all my shit up and moving, which is – you know, that's stressful enough without worrying about, you know, the fucking mortgage police coming to your door.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's fun. It's awesome.
Well, good job. I think so far it's been a successful endeavor. Other than
well, I'll tell you what it is. It's I mean the best part about it is just looking at stuff and going. It's like that great scene in Arrested Development in the pilot episode when George is on the phone. The SEC cops are about to descend on the boat, and George is on the phone and he's talking to his secretary. He's like. Keep it, shred it, shred it, shred it, keep it, shred it. That's what I'm doing in the Farm of Doom right now. I'm looking at all this crap that I own, and I'm like, keep it, shred it. Like, it's so liberating to think that I'm downsizing finally.
Yeah, yeah.
That there's a serious downsizing coming where I will be so much more mobile after this, so much lighter, just in terms of sheer tonnage of shit that I own.
Yeah.
You know, I said it before. It's George Carlin said – you know, what is your house? Well, it's the place where you keep your stuff. You know, mm-hmm. I just want less stuff. I just want less shit.
Yeah.
So that's the liberating part. I mean, it's going to hurt and it's going to be awful and sad. But the upside, Peanut cannot wait to get the fuck out of here. Kids are so scary intuitive in ways that we don't even know. Mm-hmm. You know, she's 9 and she gets it. To extremes that I can't imagine she gets, like just how creepy and shitty this town is and how mean the kids are and the, you know, just she just cannot wait to get out of here. And to me, that was the worst part of it, was kind of breaking that news to her. And she's like, oh, no, fuck, let's get out of here. Let's go. Yeah. She's ready. She's packing her bags, man. She's ready to go, which is just amazing to me, which tells me that I'm doing the right thing.
Well, if you play your cards right and keep your eye on Craigslist, you'll be able to find a fucking palace for relatively cheap. I mean, your friend and mine and now a Breitbart disciple, Lee Stranahan, bugged out of Los Angeles probably with a train of creditors chasing him and went to, I don't know where the hell he went, somewhere in the Midwest, and found a place like a suburban palace on Craigslist for next to nothing a month, rental.
Huh. I never even thought of Craigslist.
And
the place I'm looking at is probably not, you know, urban enough to list on Craigslist, but yeah, you know, rentals, they tend to turn up, you know, just because there's nothing right now. It's around the summer, shit'll turn up, you know, the turnover's ridiculous. We'll find something. So, I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, you'll be okay.
Yeah. The Farm of Doom has just been this massive failed experiment in you know, it's very much like that Chevy Chase movie, Funny Farm, where, you know, just it's going to be idyllic and Redbud, the town is just going to be lovely. And it turns out to be just full of nuts and psychos and, you know, just nothing but bad news.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, did you go into it thinking it was going to be a fixer upper that you were going to be?
Oh, no. See, it's exactly the opposite. When we moved in, it was pristine and perfect. And I proceeded to fix it down. Like I proceeded to trash the shit out of the place. Like, you know, when I lived in Virginia, when I lived in Sterling, Virginia, just outside of Leesburg there, between Leesburg and Tysons Corner on Route 7, I had a quarter acre, like a corner lot with a concrete slab house, a rambler, with a quarter, not even a quarter acre, just a shitty, you know what Northern Virginia suburb lawns look like.
Yeah.
And I could not take care of that. It was the worst looking lawn in the history of Northern Virginia. It was just a brown, weedy disaster. And I move out here with like 3 acres of mowable property. What the fuck was I thinking? I can't take care of this, you know, corner lot to save my life with a push mower. And out here I need like a John Deere tractor. So, I mean, just everything from the lawn to the sunroom to the basement to that we had a sump pump over flood and just flood the basement, which was my office at one point. Never took care of that. So it's just awful back there. I've just trashed this place. It's like a bunch of fucking college. It's like a college, like a fraternity right. moved in
yeah.
and just, you know, Omega House, the shit. Just use it as a verb. They just trashed the shit out of the place.
Have you strewn the Farm of Doom with like old road signs and Christmas lights inside?
Yeah. There are Christmas lights still outside. Like there's one tree. I'll have to take a picture of this. There's a tree out front that has literally the bark has grown over the Christmas lights. They've been on there so much. Oh, the Christmas lights are embedded in the tree.
The tree has actually grown. The Christmas lights have yes. grown into the wood of the tree.
Yes. The wood has grown around the Christmas light because I just put them up and I just thought, fuck it. Not taking those down because that was the strand that tried to electrocute me. I was up on a ladder. I was on a 10-foot ladder putting the – one year I did the entire house like you wouldn't fucking believe. Literally like the Griswold place in Christmas Vacation. I mean every square inch covered in lights. It was ridiculous and I had it all on timers. This is back when I gave a shit about anything, about life and holidays.
I remember those days myself quite well.
Yeah, I remember when you gave a shit.
Yeah, I gave a shit about things like that.
So I was up on a – and it was one of these warm – pre-Christmas, it was a very warm early December. So I was out in shorts, literally out in shorts and short sleeve shirt hanging Christmas lights. And I was up in this tree and I was stringing these lights and something in the back of my brain went,
maybe I shouldn't plug them into my mouth.
Well, no, I had them plugged in so I could see. And something in my reptile brain went, I think there's something seriously wrong here. And then something closer in said, yeah, I think we may be being electrocuted right now. And I looked down, and in my left arm, literally embedded like a sliver in the skin of my left arm, subcutaneously, is the filament of a broken bulb. And it's conducting electricity through my body, like in just a very small dose, but pouring, you know, 120 volts of AC through my body. And I shit a brick when I saw it, because as soon as I saw it, I felt it. Like I thought, oh my God, I'm being electric. I'm literally taking on massive doses of house current right now. And I freaked out and I went one way with my arm that was being electrocuted. I went the other way with my feet and I fell the fuck off that ladder and smashed myself up really hard. Like really did myself some damage. Damage that I still feel today on my right knee, as a matter of fact.
Nice.
So I cursed that tree and the fruit that should ever it should bear, like Jesus did with the figs. Jesus was kind of a dick that way, cursing that fig tree. But I cursed it and its name, and I've never touched that strand of lights again, and it's the tree has now grown up around the lights. I'll have to take a picture of that.
I can't wait. You know, it'd be great to plant some video cameras, some surveillance cameras in there for when the bank bank guys like tore the place. And
I can't wait
for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, also, I got some stuff to show them. I got some shit for them.
Dead cats and, you know.
Yeah, the cat situation.
Sewage.
Becoming a crisis. Really becoming a crisis.
They're going to think you're a serial killer or something. You don't have any bodies stored. There haven't been any human deaths there that you've had to.
No, there was almost one when a semi ran over a motorcyclist right out front.
Oh, God.
Kidding. Yeah. Not even kidding. What happened? No, this is what happened. A motorcyclist, a guy and his wife were on their hogs coming back from Sturgis, as a matter of fact, because we're on a highway where around Sturgis time, you know, the great motorcycle migration to Sturgis. Mm-hmm. We were on a highway where they would just come all day. I mean, it'd just be literal wall to wall.
Oh, so you've got Harley people up and down roadway once a year parading from Sturgis. What's the noise they make on South Park?
Oh, you see that episode?
Because the Harley Davidsons go douche 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 douche. And then when the people actually walk around, they make the revving gesture with their hands and go douche 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 douche. Right, sorry.
Yeah, pretty much. So you know, the two things that don't mix on the Farm of Doom are motorcycles and deer. And what happened was this guy, and he looked exactly like you would think, you know, enormous beer belly, leather chaps, huge ZZ Top beard, bandana with the ponytail, and his wife, who literally looked exactly the same except for the beard, were tandeming on these cruiser bikes. You know, the great big ones with, like, you know, like they've got the desk lamp and the computer. It's like a fucking, like a ficus.
There's a wet bar there. They've got the little miniature refrigerator. Right.
Yeah, I've seen those. A rolling hotel, like a rolling Comfort Inn or a Holiday Inn.
And you know what? They also have the baffles carved out of the exhaust, so it makes really loud noises anyway, so they can feel like they're really on a Harley.
Exactly, even though it's a rolling luxury palace.
Even though it really is an RV at that point.
Yeah, basically a two-wheel RV. So they're tooling on. They're heading south, so going that way past the Farm of Doom. And what happened was a deer literally jumped into this guy's chest, was crossing the road, and was spooked by the motorcycle and jumped, and the guy just slammed into the deer in his chest. No. And knocked the shit out of the deer, killed it, or broke it in ways that eventually killed it. Oh. And he went sprawling, but there was a semi right behind those guys. And that semi had to Jake break the shit out of that thing to stop before it ran over that guy's skull. And I was mowing the lawn at the time. And so we almost did have a catastrophe.
So what you do is when you kill a cat there, you call your brother-in-law with a snow shovel, and you come and you scrape it off of the road and bury it in a shallow grave back near your marijuana plants.
Right. Ooh, that reminds me.
You better slash and burn. Yeah, before the bank comes by. Good God.
I might be able to make him a deal. Right. Oh, but there is actually, now that I think about it, north, just on the other side of my property line, there is a shrine to a dead guy who wrapped himself around a tree or a foam pole just on the other side of the property here. And if every year since we've been here, this shrine has gotten more and more elaborate and bigger and creepier. I don't understand. I lost my mother-in-law in a violent road crash. That's why we moved here. But I know something about roadside death, but I don't understand the point of memorializing the place that it happened. Like, if your loved one got shot in a 7-Eleven robbery, you wouldn't go and build a shrine next to the Twinkie display, right? I mean, why do these people do these kind of grotesque memorials on the sides of roads? I mean, don't you bury the person? Isn't there a grave site that you can go and tend to? I don't understand the point of fetishizing the actual physical location of this person's death. And that thing being, you know, like right on my property. Like, I feel like running my lawnmower over it every now and then just because it just annoys me conceptually.
All right.
So anyway.
Yeah. But,
have you ever lost anyone in a violent accident? What's your relationship with death other than like old people, grandparents croaking?
God, that's a good question. You know, I don't know whatever happened to him, but I mean, I was in a head-on collision when I was in college. I was driving a gigantic boat of a car at the time. It was like it was a Grand Marquis. Ooh. And it was like a pimpmobile. It was white. It had a sunroof. It was completely tricked out with like electronic seats and everything. It was a complete gas guzzler. And I was delivering pizzas at the time and living off campus. And I was driving home and it had snowed that day. And I was coming around this bend and some guy flew out of control and smacked me head on. And believe it or not, I wasn't wearing a seatbelt and I was completely uninjured.
Was because he killed, the other guy?
I don't know, but he was unconscious in his car. I mean, I got out of the car and walked over, and he was slumped over his steering wheel.
And then what did you do, leave?
I left. I said, what? Oh, okay, you're right. No, I didn't. Of course I didn't leave.
Oh, my God. I would have fucking, I would effect a citizen's arrest at this point if you actually left that guy.
No. But he swerved into my lane and hit me head on.
Jesus.
Because of the, I assume because of the icy conditions or something like that.
Wow.
But, yeah, I mean, he completely waffled the front of this car. And if it hadn't been for the fact that that car was gigantic, it would have been a disaster. I would have been probably through the windshield.
Wow.
Because I wasn't wearing a seatbelt. Smart. I'm smart.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I mean, I think from what I recall, he did survive because I nailed the hell out of his insurance company.
Yeah.
Because, well, I mean, so, you know.
Story had a happy ending then.
That's right. I did get lots of money from the injured man.
I've never actually been in any sort of actual, other than just, you know, the regular parking lot fender benders. But one time we were, me and all my buddies from Lake Braddock were headed out to James Madison on Route 66 there, and saw a really, really bad accident going the opposite direction. And we were the first on the scene. The guy, his name was Bruce. I don't know his last name, but his first name was Bruce. He tore into the you know, the metal stanchion there, the Jersey wall, the Jersey thing there, tore into that, tore his car. He was driving a Camaro, tore it in half. I mean, literally severed this car right down the, you know, crosswise down the middle. So the front half and the Jersey wall he ran into was over a, an overpass in this little one horse town somewhere in Virginia. And it ejected him. That's what I saw. I was driving. I had a 1980 Buick Century. It was my first car. I was driving that, and I saw in the rearview mirror, I saw this something go shooting straight up in the air. And by the time I saw it come down, I realized it was a person. He had to have been shot 20 feet in the air. I mean, just straight up and down, cartwheeling, arms and legs, and came down on the other side of that. You know, on the, you know, down underneath the highway, and cracked his skull like a fucking egg. And we were the first ones there, because we just, I mean, we saw it happen. And you know, we turned around on the median and raced back. And when we got there, the car was in two pieces and smoldering. And people were starting to come out from the little town that made this overpass. And I mean, his head was just splattered. And somebody found his wallet and was shouting his name to keep him conscious. There's no way he was living at that point, but they were trying to keep him conscious. So that was the first corpse, the first non, you know, mummified family member that I ever saw.
Jeez.
But I've got such a small family. I've just had very little relationship with death. I mean, my grandparents, sure, but I never knew my dad's parents, either of them. And my dad had a very small family. My mom has a very small family. So other than my two grandparents, whom I love dearly, I've just had, and then my mother-in-law, I've just had no real, you know, relationship with death.
You're very, very, very lucky man.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you know, and I don't know. I don't know why we're talking about death, but.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's talk about soap now, huh?
Yeah, they've got soap that make dead people smell better.
This is actually becoming a theme on the show. Let's talk about something awful and then segue right into Bubble Genius. That's what we've been doing, yeah. I saw a guy launch 50 feet out of his car and break his neck and die right in front of me.
Soap!
And now it's time to talk about Bubble Genius.
Yes. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't even start the show. It's the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis show. I'm Bob, that's Elvis. Brought to you exclusively by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. Lots of specials happening at Bubble Genius. And now that my computer is actually functioning again, I can read them to you. Actually, I don't even need to do that because we have a new commercial from Bubble Genius. Evidently, there was some oral surgery happening amongst the principals at Bubble Genius. And so I've been instructed that their commercial might be a little incoherent because of Novocaine. I have no idea. I don't think it's going to be that bad. But let's play the new commercial from Bubble Genius.
Coffee! I need coffee. I love coffee. Got any coffee?
Here at Bubble Genius, we love our coffee as much as the next person.
Coffee!
But we also know it's Caffeine Awareness Month.
Caffeine? Coffee? Where's my coffee?
If you're trying to cut back, you can still enjoy your morning coffee with our Bathicino coffee and sugar scrub.
Coffee? And sugar? Real coffee?
Yep, it's got real coffee in it. Or try our Bubble Brew soap set, a half dozen coffee bean-shaped guest soaps.
Coffee!
Hey, this soap is great.
Have your coffee and wash with it, too. Enjoy Caffeine Awareness Month with Bubble Genius.
www.bubblegenius.com!
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
I'm fairly certain she was doing an impression of me.
Yeah.
Because I drink tons of coffee every day. Yeah. It is Caffeine Awareness Month. I had no idea it was. But
I'm very aware of caffeine.
Were you aware that there's a month for it? I had no idea.
It's any month that ends in Y for me.
Yeah.
No, that doesn't work.
If you go get your coffee related products at Bubble Genius, make sure to type in your promo code for the show to get 15% off. Bob and Elvis, BOBANDELVIS. That's the part you put in there.
Did you enjoy the lovely Oscars this year?
I didn't even watch them. There was an Oscars? I don't know.
Yeah, I fast-forwarded through anything that those two dumbasses that hosted had to say. The guy and the girl. The whole hosting of it has become a disaster. But I like to see who wins, and the King's speech did really well, so, which I thought was a fantabulous movie.
What, and they're constantly it seems to me as if they're constantly reinventing the wrong thing on the show. The thing that always tends to work is the host.
Yeah.
And then it's actually the length of the show and the gratuitous speeches and the ridiculous, obviously lobbied for winners.
Yeah. Well, they've got all that down to a sign. I mean, the speeches, they start playing them off within 30 seconds. I mean, it's ridiculous. Nobody gets to make a heartfelt speech anymore. You just got to get up and, you know, give a thumbs up and sit back down. But I don't watch it. I mean, the one thing I like is the retrospective thing. I like to see who kicked it. You know, I like to see who crapped out and died that year. And I like to see, you know, some of the, like the AFI, I don't know, like the Martin Scorsese Award winner or whatever. I don't know. Every year they give some fucking award out. But it's mostly, it's just all the industry kissing itself on the ass. But I do enjoy the films. I do enjoy a good film.
Yeah, and you were really enthusiastic about Colin Firth, weren't you?
I love me some Colin Firth.
I could tell.
He's dreamy. He is, and he was amazing. You've got to see that movie.
I haven't seen it.
The King's Speech. You've got to see it. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Really, really good. And a dear friend sent me a copy of the screenplay, and the screenplay won for Best Original Screenplay, and it was unbelievable. I mean, truly a work of art, this screenplay. Just in the, you know, just from top to bottom, it's just an amazing screen. Just an amazing film. Amazing film.
Yeah. I haven't seen it. I should see it.
You should.
And
was lovely.
Right. And as it usually happens, the Oscar nominated movies, I only tend to see them after they've been nominated.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Because some of them, I mean, I hate to sound ridiculous and like a film troglodyte, but look, some of the movies I never even heard of until they're actually nominated.
Oh, sure.
I mean, I had no idea there was a movie called The King's Speech until it was actually nominated for something.
Oh, well, then you're lame.
Yeah, I
know. Because Hitchens was all up in arms about it, about its historical accuracy. So there has a little bit of politics to it, because it got Christopher Hitchens' nuts in a bunch.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we better get some politics here.
I guess.
You've probably been following Mike Huckabee this week.
Fuckabee. Yeah, fuck that guy.
Did you say, did you call him Fuckabee?
I did say Fuckabee. Because, you know, I have this sickness where I want to like some of these guys. Like, I remember having a conversation with my dad way in advance of the primaries. Well, I guess as the Republican primary was starting to shake out. And I remember telling my dad, of all the Republican candidates, I'd be fine with John McCain because I think he's, you know, blah, 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 blah. Everything I told my dad that I thought McCain was like, he proved to be not like in his actual run. I mean, McCain ran against himself, really, against the, you know, the rebel of the 2000 campaign. I mean, just not that guy. So, and but Huckabee, until recently, he's gone full birther. Now he's all he's completely lost me. He's he's just a complete douche now. And now I really want him to run. Because the things he's saying now, it sounds like he's going to, even though I've read that he may, you know, that he's thinking he may not. But I don't know why you would come out on the wacky, teabaggery, white Christian douchebag side of these things if you're not planning on running. So I really hope he does so that I can campaign the shit out of Barack Obama and beat him. Now I just want to beat him. I want to beat him. Throat punch him.
Well, I mean, it's completely obvious that he's running because, as Lawrence O'Donnell pointed out last night, that it's that 51% of the Republican voters, Republican primary voters, 51% of them are birthers.
Yeah, yeah. So you wouldn't come out, you wouldn't go to these extremes, you wouldn't say these tremendously douchey, shitty things unless you were pandering to that base. There's no political upside to coming on full birther if you're not sucking that dick. So he needs to burn in hell.
Yeah.
And he's a literal rapturist. He is a literal Armageddonist. That is terrifying. I never believed George Bush's born-againism. That was just a cynical political horseshit thing. I believe Huckabee is like that. I believe Huckabee is like fucking Greg Stillman in The Dead Zone, where someday he's going to wake up and have the idea that God told him in a, you know, in a dream to nuke China or something, and he will. I mean, that's terrifying to me.
Yeah.
That should be an immediate disqualification for public office, that you believe that that you literally believe we're in the end of days. That immediately should kick your ass out of the running.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the notion that this guy is the sensible one of the batch, that he's the gregarious nice guy who everyone kind of likes, Mike Huckabee.
Not anymore.
No, well, I mean, you know, once a liar, always a liar. I mean, this guy's who knows what this guy's been talking about just out of his ass for years. I mean, this is what this is all about. He does not really believe that the president's from Kenya or that, you know, he's a Muslim or anything like that. He's just, I mean, and that makes it actually worse that he's lying about it. He's knowingly perpetuating a lie about the president.
It's worse than that. These particular lies are so insidious and with this particular president are so inflammatory and so dangerous to this president's life, to his credibility, to American credibility, to our safety. It goes beyond just normal dog whistling. I mean, with Clinton, it was one thing. It was, you know, trying to discredit this guy. He's just a fat, lovable bubba. He eats some Big Macs and gets some blowjobs. These dog whistles have serious consequences. Why Huckabee can go fuck himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's two sides to it. First of all, this is the less serious of the really awful sides to this this series of dog whistles from Huckabee and the rest. The less serious of the serious things is the Southern strategy. Anyone who denies that the Republicans are engaged in using Southern strategy politics is also in and of themselves lying, because this is exactly what it is. This is precisely what the Southern strategy is all about. It's to hype up, you know, ignorant, white, dumbass voters to getting them out to the polls. Obviously, 51% of them are susceptible to it. And so this, you know, this is going to stir them up and say, okay, we got to go vote for this guy because he's with us, because he knows about the birth certificate
and he knows about Kenya.
Yeah, yeah. But then the more serious side of all of this is it actually paints the president as being with enemy number one, that he is part and parcel, that he is this Islamic extremist.
Sleeper cell.
Right, yeah. And because he's so secretive about it, he is, in fact, like a sleeper cell that he could spring forward at any second and institute through presidential proclamation Sharia law, and then suddenly all our kids are you know, all the public school system becomes you know, madrasas, and God only knows.
I know there are literally people that believe that. I mean, literally terrified, like old ninnies with blue hair that go to bed every night weeping into their geriatric foam pillows because they think the country has been subverted by sleeper Muslim terrorist presidents. There are absolutely those people exist. And fuckholes like Huckabee are perpetuating quietly and insidiously and knowingly falsely doing that, you know, perpetuating that. So he can seriously get cancer in his dick hole.
Now, we have several politicians now who deserve cancer in their dick holes. We've got Huckabee, Mike Pence last week.
Pence needs it.
That guy from Georgia who was trying to pass that miscarriage police law, you know.
That's a good one. they should all get serious cancer in their dick holes.
In their dick holes, okay. But that is, going back to what your original point was, is that it is dangerous because if you start painting the president as being a terrorist, we're at war against terrorists, right? And this guy is with them. He's a conspirator, you know, and God only knows what, you know, what people want to do as vigilantes.
This is his macaca moment.
Yeah.
I hope that, what's his face? George Allen? In Virginia, opened his stupid, dumbass, racist mouth and said macaca, and that sunk him. I really hope that this Mau Mau thing is Huckabee's macaca moment. I really do. I'm gonna tweet at him every single day until he's done politically. Just Mau Mau this and Mau Mau that.
Yeah.
Fucking dumbass.
If you probably saw this brought to light on Sullivan's blog.
Yeah, that's where I get all my news.
Right. With the positioning of the word Mau Mau. Is that what? Oh. It's in a lyric from Hair?
It's in a certain book that was popular amongst Southern Baptists of a certain creed. This guy went to proselytize, went to basically witness to all these gangs, and they were their leader's name. Their leader called himself Mau Mau. I mean, it's just got all these dog whistle, boo whitey connotations to it.
Yeah, their view of the Mau Mau revolution in Kenya is very different than ours because he probably grew up hearing that the British were a bunch of imperialists who persecuted his grandfather. Well, first of all,
they did.
Yeah, and the clearly he's never heard of the British Empire. But,
right. When did it become necessary for politicians to become apologists for the British Empire? They used to say, an Irishman will tell you that one of my best friends in college was Irish. I mean, like literally Irish. Just come over. And we were talking about genealogy. I said, well, all my family's from Great Britain. Go back to the Elizabethan court and blah blah blah. And he's like, well, they say the sun never sets on the British Empire. I said, they say the sun never set on the British Empire. And he said, well, that's because no one trusts an Englishman in the dark.
Yeah.
And that was a great, British imperialism is just a fucking fact. And it was not pleasant.
No.
To be a British subject to be brown and in a British colony at some point.
Yeah.
It meant that you had something they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, usually.
Yeah. We've had our own bit of history with the British here in America, I think.
Yeah.
But, here's that lyric here. I just found it on Sullivan's blog. I'm going to say some nasty words here, but this is the lyric from Hair. So this is the question. Well, I'll get to the question after I read the lyric. It says, I'm a colored spade, a nigger, a black nigger, a jungle bunny, jigaboo, coon, pickaninny, Mau Mau, Uncle Tom, Aunt Jemima, little black Sambo, blah, blah, blah. And so that's the lyric from Hair. It actually has the words or the duplicate word Mau Mau.
Yeah.
And so the question is whether Huckabee was just like, was he really misspeaking or was he communicating this slang term to the same people he was communicating Muslim and Kenya and all that crap to?
Right.
You know.
In it to a certain subset, in a certain cast of people, Mau Mau is just as bad as Nigger or any other, or Spade or Coon or you know, Wop for it. It's just another shorthand for, you know, it's like Wog. There was a British, British colonization of like Afro-Caribbeans they were called Wogs. Gollywogs, and that's still a racist term today. He's just a racist crap bag.
Well, that's what it is. I mean, I don't know what else you can call it. I mean, I even feel weird about calling it the Southern strategy because it actually kind of disguises what it really is, which is race baiting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Fuck you, Huckabee.
Really. And then so he issues a retraction. Right?
It's not really worse.
A retraction. And then brings up the stupid thing. Barack Obama makes one gaffe, one verbal gaffe where he says something about 57 states, right?
Yeah.
And so Huckabee throws that in there as if, you know, as if President Obama is just loaded with fuck ups. Yeah. You know, like there's
as if he's just so uneducated, Harvard fucking law graduate that he just doesn't know how many states.
Right.
There are.
This constitutional scholar has no idea how many states there are in America.
He's really proven himself to be a dumbass.
So
just uneducated. I remember that gaffe. It was what he meant. I think it was 58 states or so. It was obvious that what he meant was he had just been to everything but Alaska and Hawaii.
Yeah.
But then he added 2 or 10 or something. I don't know. It was fucking. I can't imagine the campaign trail that given the same speech over and over again. Just how shredded your brain is after that.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't his thing. Is not pathological like Bush, where Bush just couldn't open his mouth without saying something just fucking retarded.
That's right. Yeah, it's like they're not printing calendars with 365 different Obama-isms. Are they really?
Well, they are. Oh, yeah, yeah. I've been in my chair the 50% off calendar kiosks at the mall.
Yeah.
And there's 365 days of Palin. And I'm sure they have to work really hard to fill that Obama calendar. You know, I'm sure there's lots of repetition and stupid stuff in there. But they do have them.
Okay.
Yeah. That they wouldn't be knee slappers, like, you know, how hard it is to put food on your family.
Yeah.
Or men and fish can live together in harmony.
Right. Or my favorite, which was Iraq, which is a peance-friance.
Peance-friance.
I still don't know what the hell peance-friance is. I don't know what the hell he was trying to say when George Bush says peance-friance. Iraq.
The blog for like a month was nothing but peance-friance.
Iraq was a peance-friance.
I think he meant I don't know. He was just so funny though. Just the one thing, and he said it here in Omaha. The thing that I think revealed the most about what a fucking dumbass he was, and just how much of a bubble the kind of wealth that the Bushes have creates is when that woman in Omaha said, you know, I work 3 jobs. And blah, blah, blah. And he goes, oh, you work 3 jobs. Uniquely American, isn't it? Like, yeah, isn't it? Just uniquely American. He's saying it like she was standing up saying it with pride.
Right.
You know, like she's like, it's not like she's saying, I've got 3 beautiful children. I've got 3 fucking jobs. And he's like, uniquely American, isn't he? He was trying to turn it into a pride thing, like a Ford commercial.
Yeah.
I was like, what? What a bubble you must live in if you think that that's just awesome.
Yeah.
You know, she's got to work 3 fucking jobs in your fucking economy to to put food on her family.
Well, there's the other one where he's asked about sovereignty, tribal sovereignty, and he just completely he actually just defines the word sovereignty, but by actually using the word sovereignty is just that, it's sovereign.
It's sovereign. They're sovereign.
These are sovereign entities.
Put a T-Y on it.
What? Yeah, whatever. And then he says, here's the Pian's France audio.
It's in the interest of long-term peace in the world that we work for a free and secure and peaceful Iraq. A Pian's France secure Iraq in the midst of the Middle East will have enormous. It's in the interest of...
Oh, that's so great.
It's a peace-free
and secure Iraq.
I think something in his brain wanted to say a more peaceful, a freer, like a p- pacier, freer. He just got jammed up. It's just a log jam in that little pin size brain is, right. And he said peanuts friends.
it's a log jam in his peanut brain.
That should have been an immediate, like, Congress just should have gone immediately into session on fucking impeachment right there. Just, oh my god, the president said peanuts friends. He's obviously retarded. Impeach.
Let's have the vote now. Let's just do it. Let's do a live vote, like the end of The Contender. Live vote.
We should have a Pence-Friance amendment in the Constitution. If a president gets that far off the rails and just murders the language, you can immediately impeach him. Like in fucking Crimson Tide, you can just have Denzel Washington boot him the fuck out.
Well, we forget. I mean, with Sarah Palin and clearly Mike Huckabee misspeaking now, we forget about this. I mean, this is Bush. What I'm about to play here, this is Bush at his most retarded. I mean, this was unbelievably retarded. This was a fourth grader trying to write an essay exam question that he clearly didn't study for. Listen to this. I'm going to play this clip here, if it's actually going to play.
Governor and that president, so you have a unique experience looking at it from two directions. What do you think tribal sovereignty means in the 21st century? And how do we resolve conflicts between tribes and the federal and state governments?
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that. It's sovereign. You've been given sovereignty and you're viewed as a sovereign entity.
Okay.
And
people laughing.
Therefore, the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities.
Oh, my God.
Wow, just way to define a thing, George.
Yeah, that's right. It's hard to believe.
Say what you see, George.
I mean, America actually survived that, which says a lot. You know what? It says a lot about America. That we endured that 8-year presidency.
We're still sucking it hard. We're still
That's true. Yeah. I mean, the guy who said Pience France and defined tribal sovereignty as being
sovereign.
Just that. It's sovereign.
Started two wars.
That guy, I mean, it's a miracle that all we had was the Great Recession.
Yeah. And two endless, bottomless trillion-dollar wars.
That's right. That's all.
Hundreds of thousands of people.
That's
Woo-hoo!
All.
Pience France.
Good God.
Yeah. Maybe someday when the aliens land or the mud people come up from the center of the earth and they'll find like coins and it'll have Bush's head on it. It'll say Pience France on it. And they'll understand why we destroyed ourselves. They'll be like, oh, Pience France. I get it now.
Right.
They had to destroy themselves. They had a leader once that said Pience France.
So here's it's staggering. Here's Mike Huckabee's statement regarding what he had said the other day about Kenya and Mau Mau's. He said, on Monday, while on the Steve Malzberg radio show on New York's WR radio, I asked the President Obama's birth certificate issue. In my answer, I simply misspoke when I alluded to President Obama growing up in Kenya and meant to say Indonesia. Mm-hmm. Well, he was doubly wrong then, because the president's father and grandfather weren't from Indonesia.
No. Well, he meant, you know, the father from Kenya. He didn't mention at all that President Obama had absolutely no relationship with the man.
That's right.
Whatsoever. You know, wants to try and tar him with this Kenyan colonialism brush, even though he had no experience with it other than just tourism.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, he didn't even grow up in Indonesia. I mean, he spent, what, 2 years there, if that? When his mom was with this other guy for
age six.
But that's bullshit. You wouldn't have said anything about Mau Mau's if you'd thought about Indonesia. That didn't make any sense.
It's like saying, you know, it's like talking about Alaska and accidentally saying New Jersey.
Right. Sure do love those garden tomatoes from Alaska. It's like mentioning something that's very specific to that culture and then just going on and on and just, oh, I misspoke. I meant Indonesia.
Yeah. So he does a plug for his book here and then says, I'm not surprised the New York Times chose to sensationalize this story. In fact, the New York Times, the AP, and other news organizations ran with this quote-unquote sensationalized story, despite being specifically told by Steve Malzberg himself that they were incorrect in their assessment on the soundbite. You just can't help but to laugh when my simple slip of the tongue becomes a huge story and a certain presidential candidate claiming to visit all 57 states gets widely ignored.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Sorry, Huck, but he's president now, douche.
Yeah.
So obviously, I hate when they do that, when they retrofit when a certain presidential candidate, Mr. President to you, fuckhole.
Well, Huckabee clearly thinks it's still 2008.
I guess. He still thinks it's 1868.
18.
These guys, they're clearly unreconstructed. Mm-hmm. Believe me. It's what they all do. Say something stupid to the base that gets clipped, that can get clipped and repeated over and over again. Get the disinformation out. Then make a shot over the bow at the lamestream media in your not retraction retraction. Mm-hmm. And then get another dig in. So nobody will actually see the apology. You know, no one cares. The clip, the sound clip is out. The Fox News piece is in the can.
Yeah.
So then they just come back and make fun of the mainstream media for, you know, covering it and move along. That's how it works.
So he releases this ridiculous statement, which is not really an apology. It's a plug for his book and a jab at the president at the end. So, I mean, obviously he's distancing himself from what he clearly said. But then today, he says, he's on another radio show or something.
Another radio show.
He says he's on I'm trying to find the radio show. It doesn't matter. It's another ridiculous
cockle radio show.
Yeah, something.
Far right this time, like a extreme right show.
Yeah. And this is the level-headed, this is the affable, gregarious, you know, country yickadoo, good old boy, you know, Mike Huckabee.
Yeah, he's on Brian Fisher's show.
Brian Fisher. He says, and I have said many times publicly that I do think the president has a different worldview. And I think it is, in part, molded out of a very different experience. Most of us grew up going to Boy Scout meetings and, you know, our communities were filled with Rotary clubs, not madrasas.
Yeah, way to clean it up there, Huck.
And I just do think that there is, again, I'm not saying he's not a citizen. I've never said that. I've said the opposite. I've never said he's a Muslim.
Oops.
Right. So he's got madrasas in there. He's got citizen in there. He's got Muslim in there.
Mm-hmm. Different worldview.
So if you are, in fact, a wingnut and you're tuned into the Brian Fuckhole show, whatever it is, mm-hmm. on
Brian Fisher.
By the way, they just hand out syndication deals, don't they?
I've never heard of these guys.
If you have a pulse and you're a wingnut, you get your own radio show.
Yeah.
So if you haven't heard about all of the birther stuff, you sure as shit do know now. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, that's the whole lot. So he's just rolling this stuff out. So he goes ahead and implies that the president attended a madrasa, which has been widely disproved.
I don't care if he did. I don't give a fuck. I don't care if there's pictures of President Obama as a child in a madrasa, literally having a Quran hammered up his ass. I don't care. Show me that picture. I will be more impressed with the president for having survived that and gone on to be president of the fucking United States. I don't care if that exists. I don't care if he'd spent lots of time in a madrasa. I don't give a rat's ass.
Of course you don't.
I'd rather have this president spending months and months and years in a madrasa than 2 minutes of Huck in the White House with his Southern Baptist shithead philosophy thinking that the world's going to end tomorrow.
Right.
Because he literally doesn't believe in evolution, and he literally believes that we're in the end times. So what consequence-driven life do you lead? What does it matter what your policies are if you think that we're living in the end days where the fucking brimstone and the triple-headed, multicranial, sword-spitting dragon is coming to eat all the Jews and the Unitarians?
You know, and I still believe that all of this began because people just confused Barack Obama with Keith Ellison. I really honestly believe that a lot of that was just basic confusion. Like, they don't know who the fuck they're talking about.
I don't know.
They know Keith Ellison, who's the only Muslim member of Congress. And you know, at the time, Senator Barack Obama, and they you know, Barack Obama is the one with the unusual name after all. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it has more to do with just simply trying to underscore the fact that he's, you know, with the terrorists.
Well, there's something in that last, but read that last, the last part of that quote again. I don't have it in front of me. I've just got the main part. The line after "not madrasas," where okay. he says something about, read that part.
And I just do think that there is, again, I'm not saying he's not a citizen. I've never said that. I've said the opposite. He said the, I guess that means he is, a, he said that he is a citizen. I've said the but opposite. I've never said he's a Muslim.
There. See, it
the way that again, sentence is framed,
the way
yeah.
that's constructed makes it sound like Muslims can't even be American citizens.
Mm-hmm. All right.
You know, that there's some connection there between, you know, real Americans can't be Muslims. I mean, Muslim is just, has become just synonymous with boogeyman, with terrorist, with, you know?
Yeah. Remember when, remember that batshit lady with the red sweater confronted John McCain at that town hall meeting and said, yeah, I think he's an Arab. I think he's an Arab.
An Arab.
An Arab. And McCain says, McCain, you know, I mean, to McCain's credit, he says, well, no, he's not. But then McCain fucks up and says, yeah. no, he's not. He loves his family. And he's an American. And he loves his family. As if people of Middle Eastern descent don't love their families and, you know.
Right. Right.
People, you know, Arab Americans don't love their country, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Yeah,
it's the automatic demon. I can almost understand that sentiment. You know, February or September 12th, 2001. You know, we're 10 years from that fucking thing now. It's, I mean, how much more juice does this have left in it? This terror of Muslims. I mean, it's so sad. We're so reactionary Americans. We're so terrified of stuff. I mean, we're just such scaredy cats, such babies.
Yeah, that's true.
Little babies.
I mean, when we were talking about this, not you and I, we weren't doing a show then, at least I don't think we were doing a show then, but, you know, a couple of years ago, I mean, before the election, you think, well, okay, this is going to be a thing for the duration of this election. But, I mean, I cannot believe, I can believe that it's lasted this long because it's become a very, very convenient racial dog whistle. Yeah. Yeah,
that's all they've got. They can't go after him on being a shitty politician or not getting things done, or, you know, they've got nothing.
Well, they can't really debate on policy. They can't attack him on policy because the Republican Party is no longer about policy.
No, it hasn't been for years.
It's entirely about marketing, politics,
tax cuts. That's it. I mean, they have no viable alternative.
It's not even about tax cuts. It's simply, at this point, they are simply all about sabotaging the economy and subsequently sabotaging the Democrats and the president.
Yeah.
And acquiring more power. Because that's the whole party is about attaining office, attaining power. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do anymore about, you know, we've got the best policy and here's why. You know, if we cut taxes, this happens and that happens.
The last sensible Republican was George H.W. Bush. The guy ran on a read my lips, no new taxes platform, got into office. Somebody handed him the fucking balance sheet and he went, oh, my fucking Christ, look at this.
Yeah.
Look at what Reagan did. I'm going to need to fucking raise some taxes around here. And they booted his ass out. Mm-hmm. He was a realistic. I mean, George H.W. Bush, for all his faults, one of them, you know, is putting his junk in Barbara and creating Junior there. But for all his, you know, other retardations, the guy was a realistic politician and got screwed for going back on that one conservative thing that you can't go back on, which is, you know, read my lips, no new taxes. So that was it. That was the last time we had a serious Republican.
Mm-hmm. Right.
George H.W. Bush, period.
And, you know, we learned this week, too, that this party that's so hell-bent on reducing the deficit and cutting spending in areas that, you know, you think heretofore are untouchable. Mm. But, you know, here's this news. As the House of Representatives move forward to approving a stopgap resolution to avert a government shutdown for another 2 weeks, Democrats offered a motion to recommit that would have stripped the five largest oil companies of taxpayer subsidies, saving tens of billions of dollars in taxpayer funds. The motion failed on a vote of 176 to 249, with all Republicans voting against. Approximately a dozen Democrats joined the GOP, of course.
Of course.
A similar vote 2 weeks ago to recoup $53 billion in taxpayer funds from big oil was also voted down, largely along party lines.
Well, think of the commercials in 2012, when you can point at these shit mouths and say, we, in one, you know, in one resolution, we could have done away with X number of loopholes and created this much extra cash, and these Republicans said, no.
Yeah,
we're gonna suck big oil's dick. That's I can't wait for those ads. They just keep digging themselves deeper. We're really gonna start seeing the cause and effect of this sort of, you know, governance by corporate fiat.
Right. Here's the priorities, and this is all you really need to know about the modern Republican Party with regards to all of this. Right. Yeah. Remember, they're willing to protect at all costs billions upon billions of dollars in the corporate welfare. To big oil, right? But here's NPR. This is a transcript from NPR with Governor Mitch Daniels, the Republican from Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
All right,
that guy's sharp. I like that guy.
Inskeep, right, from NPR. Steve Inskeep says, "I want to ask something that a lot of people are confronting right now as they deal with the federal deficit, as well as state and local deficits that need to be closed. Are budget cuts, government budget cuts, worth it? Even if they end up seriously costing a lot of jobs right now?" Mitch Daniels' reply, the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is yes. Mm-hmm. Cutting the budget is more important. Cutting the budget is losing jobs is fine as long as we cut the budget. But we're not going to cut the budget in those areas like, corporate welfare for big oil.
Yeah. Well, that's where he loses it for me on a national scale. But if you look at his record in Indiana, if you look at what he's been able to do, he's actually a real serious fiscal conservative. I mean, I don't know what he's – I don't know if that answer means that he's priming his potential national political pump. But if you look at his track record in Indiana, it's pretty impressive what this guy's been able to do. So I don't know. That's the national line is if it means, yeah, if it means, because Cantor said it the other day, those aren't jobs. If you have to pay people in the federal government to do things, that's not creating jobs. I mean, that's the Republican line, that anything in the public service, anything in government except their jobs, of course, and their healthcare and everything, but all these other jobs, well, those aren't creating jobs. I mean, Cantor just came right out and said, those aren't real jobs. Fuck them.
Yeah.
So there's to be on the national stage when it comes to federal deficits, when it comes to federal payrolls, you have to just come right out and say, yeah, if it means losing jobs, fuck it, we got to cut it. But on a local level, no, forget it. The local governments can create all kinds of jobs because those are my constituents.
Well, I don't know. I don't know his particular record in Indiana. With regards,
he's got a shit ton done infrastructure wise. He's like reversed when he came in. He reversed the polarity of the debt. Like it was like they were just ridiculously upside down, and then he righted it. He's got all kinds of infrastructure stuff.
But at what cost? I mean, what are the effects of all of this? I mean, certainly you can go in and Chris Christie's been doing the same thing.
I mean, he's had metrics. Sullivan's been covering him very closely because you know Sullivan at his heart is a conservative. I mean, he's a Republican. He's not a modern Republican, but he's a conservative. And he's constantly looking for real conservatives in the sea of movement, the sea of retards like Boehner and Cantor and those douches and the teabaggers. But Sullivan has done several pieces on this guy in Indiana, on Daniels, and has been impressed with him. In fact, was hoping that he would run and thinking that he wouldn't because he doesn't have this crazy evangelical, head up his ass record. He's got, an actual record of fiscal conservatism. I've always said, show me a real fiscal conservative you know, I'm all for balanced budgets. I'm all for low debt and low deficits. That would be great. Just show me how it works. Find me a serious fiscal conservative that isn't also a social nut job. You know, find me a small government conservative that wants to get his government out of the uterus and out of the marriage business and everything else, and I may actually vote for that person.
You think Mitch Daniels is so conservative that he's actually pro-choice? I don't think so.
I'll have to find the thing that Sullivan did on him, because it was really impressive. The bullet point list of stuff that
Sullivan's a budget hawk, and I absolutely disagree with Sullivan in terms of deficit reduction right now. You know, I mean, he wants to do it now, and he's suddenly worried about the debt, and you know, you just don't do it now. It's not, now is not the time. I mean, here was Mitch Daniels at CPAC, spoke at CPAC. He said, in our nation, in our time, the Friends of Freedom have an assignment as great as those of the 1860s or the 1940s or the long twilight of the Cold War. As in those days, the American project is menaced by a survival level threat. I refer, of course, to the debts our nation has amassed for itself over decades of indulgence. It is the new red menace, this time consisting of ink.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember, Mitch Daniels, and I don't know if Sullivan covered this, Mitch Daniels was George W. Bush's budget director, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, basically presiding over, you know, record deficits, turning, you know, what was a surplus into a deficit. We know the arguments.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that this guy is as stellar as... Because, again, remember that Sullivan is concerned. I mean, Sullivan would cut spending and slash the hell out of Social Security now. Medicare now.
Here's one clip.
I just can't go along with that.
For decades, Republicans have rallied against deficits and debt, but they've been too afraid of voter backlash to venture beyond marginal measures or wasteful spending. Daniels didn't get the memo. Let's raise the retirement age, he says. Let's reduce Social Security for the rich, and let's reconsider our military commitments, too. When I asked about taxes in 2005, Daniels proposed a hike on the 100,000-plus crowd, which his own party promptly torpedoed, and he refuses to revert to Republican talking points. This is a quote. At some stage, there could well be a tax increase. They say we can't have grown-up conversations anymore. I think we can. So, I mean, it's at least he's not mired in, you know, religious evangelical bullshit talking points. You know, at least he, you know, there's some sensibility there.
Yeah, well, that we're aware of.
Yeah,
that we're aware.
But you know, like I said, that everybody, especially at the governor level, governors are tricky because they have to, you know, governing a state is much, and the politics of statewide politics is very different from nationwide. So these guys always change their song when they have to kowtow to a 50 state strategy, right? I mean, they always change their stripes. So I don't trust anybody until I see their national platform, until I know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Totally okay. Different ball wax.
Well, I mean, if he's willing to raise taxes on the rich to help balance the budget, I'd like to see that. I don't think he's done that in Indiana.
Yeah. Sarah Palin is making First Amendment noise again.
Oh, no, really? What?
Oh, yes.
How did I not hear about this? Okay.
SCOTUS ruling.
Okay.
Predictably.
With regards to, with the Supreme Court basically defended Fred Phelps and the Westboro Baptist Church and said that they're allowed to, they can protest outside of, military families. Yeah. Okay.
8-1. It was an 8-1 ruling. Sarah Palin, who, this is from Salon.com today. Sarah Palin's bizarre view of the First Amendment, which we've always known. Sarah Palin, who has more than once invoked the First Amendment when she or her allies faced criticism, today denounced the Supreme Court's 8-1 ruling allowing the Westboro Baptist Church to protest outside soldiers' funerals with signs reading "God hates fags" and the like. Tweeted Palin in response to the ruling, "Common sense and decency absent as wacko quote-unquote church allowed hate messages, MSGS, spewed at soldiers' funerals, but we can't invoke God's name in public square."
What? Oh,
God. She's so fucking clueless about the First Amendment. It's unbelievable.
I'd be interested to know, first of all, before we get to Sarah Palin, who was the dissenter in that decision?
Yeah, you know, I need to go over to SCOTUS blog, and I don't know.
Gotta be Clarence, maybe Clarence Thomas.
Maybe. That's sad. Yeah. Stupid old Clarence Thomas.
Clarence Thomas.
He's such a fucking dumbass.
It really is. He really
He's
is.
He's just such a dumbass. Unbelievable. Don't we have to do another Bubble Genius?
Yeah, yeah, we do. We'll do that, and you can look it up.
Do that. I'll look it up.
We'll figure it out. All right, let's go. Today's show brought to you by, as it always is, Bubble Genius. www.bubblegenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. Lots of specials this week. Because it is... first of all, it's... I think it's Women's History Month in March. Plus, it's also Caffeine Awareness Month.
Yes.
I don't know how those two things coincide, but... In honor of Women's History Month, Bubble Genius is celebrating great dames throughout the ages with their very own bubbly babes. Pomegranate-scented I'm Your Venus soap on a rope, sudsy and statuesque Venus de Bagno. And our beauty on a bar bath of Venus. And, just looking at, they just included a stupid picture of our soap.
It's terrible. It freaks me out.
It kind of does.
I just like to ignore that my face is on a beauty product that could go into various crevices.
Our faces nuzzled up against each other, which is kind of especially bizarre.
Super gay.
We've just been crammed into this soap together.
Uh-huh.
Okay, they've got Bathicino coffee sugar scrub. That looks good. So I was desperately trying to find that here in my notes. Bubble Genius brings you soap and body products like you've never seen before. They've got something for everyone, from guys to girls to kitties to expectant mothers and even your dogs. They even have a few things for your home. Bubble Genius strives to be good to your skin while also being good to the planet. Most of their packaging is recyclable. They source their ingredients as close to home as possible, thereby supporting other local and domestic businesses while cutting down on fossil fuel consumption. By not having stuff shipped from across the globe, they do their best to use organic ingredients when they're accessible and affordable, and their soaps are free of chemical detergents and surfactants. It's Bubble Genius at www.bubblegenius.com.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
So did you find this stuff yet?
I did. It was our good friend Alito who dissented.
Sam Alito, really?
Yeah, Sam Alito, and his dissent was based on suggestions that the speech fell into the defamation or them thar fighting words provisions of the – there are certain First Amendment protections that are not extended to obscenity or fighting words in particular. You know, words that could incite to riot or violence. And the rest of the court poo-pooed that argument. So the dissenter was Alito. Hmm. You know, I've come face-to-face with those Phelps fucks. Or a branch of them. If I'd actually seen the Fred Phelps, we may have come to fisticuffs, but which is what he wants.
Yeah, of course.
You know, those guys want somebody to throw a punch and end up in court. I took Peanut to the Billy Joel Elton John Piano Man concert in Omaha. It's a great, great, had unbelievable seats. And man, that is a concert worth 10 times the price. I mean, you get the shit kicked out of you that just musically. I mean, that's just a great. I mean, and they went on for like 3 hours. I mean, it was unbelievable. And every single song is a powerhouse. There's not a bad one in that mix, right? There's just not a B-side to that concert. It's just nonstop awesome. But the Fred Phelps people, because Elton John likes him, Elton John, as Hank Kingsley would say, Elton John is a gay. because Elton John is a gay, the Fred Phelps people were there, and they had their posters, their self-contradictory posters, and they were singing their songs, and they had their God Hates Fags stuff out. And really, you'd be surprised how quickly your blood can get up and how quickly you can be incited to violence. So I actually side with Alito a little bit on that they are fighting words, because you really, especially when you're toting your, you know, 7-year-old daughter to something, you can get pretty violent with those people pretty quickly.
Yeah. You know, I was going to say, I'm kind of ambivalent as to whether or not they should actually be allowed to appear at these things.
No, I'm a First Amendment absolutist. Well,
But there's an argument to be made, I think, not in support of obviously what they're saying.
Yeah.
But in support of being able to go and voice your opinion in a public area. And obviously it's entirely tasteless.
Oh, sure.
And it's insulting. And I think it's morally awful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course. But the government has, I mean, what Sarah Palin is saying here in her fucking retarded tweet is that she supports a big government takeover of speech where the government is able, if the government finds something to be tasteless, the big government can come and shut you up, force you not to voice your opinion in public. She's in support of that. And she makes she goes for the, oh, we can't talk about God in the public square. Says who? Yes, you can. There's just certain things in certain places because of the establishment clause and other things that you can't do. But guess what? You still got churches and basements and any other place you want to talk about your little gods, your little sky Jesuses.
Yeah.
Fucking stupid ass. She's a basic misunderstanding of the First Amendment. Everything she's ever said about it has been completely wrong. That the First Amendment is there to protect her from the press.
Yeah.
Genius.
Well, yeah. I mean, she's routinely messing that up.
Yeah. Has it completely backwards.
She gets it wrong a lot.
All the time.
She stuck her face into the Dr. Laura business and mm-hmm. somehow believed that the First Amendment protects Dr. Laura from her bosses or from listeners. No.
Yeah.
That's
criticism in general.
So Sarah Palin's now saying that the government, you know, should shut Fred Phelps out of protesting.
Yeah. She's disagreeing with an 8-1 ruling in the most conservative court in the history of the court. She's going to war with the Roberts Court, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
Basically defending gay people's rights, you know, not to have signs that say God hates fags, and in support of big government, you know, injecting itself into free speech.
Yeah. Well, admittedly, it's difficult. I mean, it's difficult to say that Fred Phelps should be allowed to protest.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not an easy position to take.
Yeah.
But you know, it's an even easier position to say they should not be allowed to protest at military funerals. It's just a very difficult. I mean, that's really where you get into the meat and potatoes of the First Amendment, where you have to say the First Amendment applies to the people, especially the people who you just vehemently disagree with.
Yeah, it's useless without that. Right. It's easy to protect speech we love.
Yeah.
It's pointless. It's like any conviction you have. If you have any conviction that's easily overturned when the heat turns on, it's not a conviction. If you have any creed that you live by that I can push you, you know, with outside your comfort zone to give up that creed, it's no longer a creed. It's no longer a defining characteristic. When things is easy, your convictions mean jack shit.
So here's the big question: How do you defend against that? Say, okay, your child has been killed in Afghanistan, and you're having a military funeral for that child, and Fred Phelps shows up with his gaggle of freaks, and they want to protest there.
Yeah.
That's not easy to deal with.
Of course not. And but our laws are there to protect us from the irrational behavior of emotional sensationalism. I mean, that's the whole point of a nation of laws, of codifying the laws are supposed to be cool and rational and inviolate and universal. The way we feel when fuckholes like Phelps show up is completely the opposite of that. And no one would blame me if I'm the dad and I throw a rock at that guy and crush his eye out of his head. Like if I just pierced his skull with a rock, no, I would probably go to jail, but no one would blame me.
Yeah.
You know, I could go and frog stomp the shit out of him, and no one would blame me. But I'd still go to jail because I had no right to injure him. But yeah, it's morally repugnant. It's got to be one of the worst human beings on earth.
That's right. Well, I mean, bludgeoning with a blunt object aside, I mean, how do you deal with? I mean, how do you?
I don't know.
I'm a dad, and that these people have showed up at my kid's funeral.
Yeah.
How do you wrap your head around that? How do you proceed without killing them?
Yeah. I don't know. It's you got to just be take solace in the fact that, you know, statistically, they only are able to reach a very small percentage of these funerals. And, you know, there's not that many people being affected by this fuckery. But, he's an old man. He needs to hurry up and die. Because that's just a cult of awful.
It really is. It's a cult.
I can't believe that there's more than one of them. I mean, I can't believe that there's that many like-minded assholes like that. You know what I mean? Like, I can see there being one or two. Like, his daughter, the Phelps's daughter is one of them. And she tweets and Facebooks. And I mean, she's all over the place. But I can't believe there's a congregation of assholes big enough that share that feeling, that think that war is I don't even know. God hates fags, so what is their thinking? That war is – the dead soldiers is God's punishment on gay people? But for their being gay people?
Because they're defending a country in which gay people are allowed to coexist, right?
Right.
With regular
– stone
with
them.
Quote-unquote regular people, right?
Yeah.
And that's the idea.
Yeah.
And especially now that gay people are allowed to serve – openly in the military.
Even worse.
And you know what? I mean, there's part of me that goes, you know, they've got to just be fucking with us. These have got to be like,
right,
like First Amendment scholars or something like
First that. Amendment alien scholars sent from the future to test our First Amendment mettle.
That's right.
Right? They're like cybernetic First Amendment scholars sent from the year 3000.
Or they're just like, they're meta pranksters. They're like the modern, or they're like Jackass. You know, they're Andy Kaufman. They're going to pop out and say, hey, just fucking with
you. We'll all have a big laugh.
Right. And that's when everyone begins to bludgeon them with rocks and hammers and baseball bats with nails shoved through them. Unbelievable. So Sarah Palin wants a big clampdown.
Yeah, she wants a clampdown on speech.
Okay. She just doesn't get it.
Nope.
And unalienable is in the Constitution, right?
She's smart.
But you know what? You go after with that, after her about that First Amendment things that she gets wrong regularly. You know, she'll say, "Wow, 57 states."
Yeah, right.
Gotcha. 57 states.
Isn't so stupid.
If I'm stupid and he's stupid, everyone's stupid. Then nobody's stupid.
Lamestream.
All right. So we didn't get to the national parks. What can I say?
Oh.
And. You know, I've had this thing about a universal translator up here for a while. But no nerd talk today.
Okay.
And the most retarded protest ever. I didn't get to that either.
Oh, no.
Oh, and that would have been fun to talk about that.
Oh, the pull your car over thing?
Yeah.
Oh.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. You fudge with us. You fudge with the best. We'll be back next week. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.